Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my good friend Lockwood Phillips. This week I was asked the question, what would Europeans do if their professional athletes protested when the national anthem was played or the flag was waved? Good question. Stay tuned to hear the answer. Enjoy.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin the program, just to advise you, yes, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate the needed beauty sleep for our foreign editor, Tom Arms. It's almost midnight as we prepare this program, or as we hear this program. It's being prepared a little before midnight here in the States. For us, it's timely. For him, it's well into the wee hours, going into the morning hours. So, Tom, with that explanation as to why we're pre-recording this, good evening to you. It's late afternoon there as we speak, but good evening to you. And my question is, what's the weather like, first and foremost?
Beautiful autumn weather, mid-60s. Mm. I'm going for my constitutional cycle for an hour or two along the Thames every day. Lovely weather. It's nice.
All right. More power to you. We are, of course, waiting for the passage of Hurricane Maria, and then hopefully we'll be finished with the hurricanes for this year. I hope I haven't jinxed anything. All right. A bunch of items to talk with you about today. One that, of course, is top of the mind across the country, and I'm curious how it's being received and played there in Europe, particularly the United Kingdom. This, of course, the issue of the National Football League. And, of course, in the States, we play football and soccer. This is not to be confused with European football, which we call soccer. But how is this story being played, and what are the reactions and responses?
It's being played big time.
Really?
You know, it's on the front page. And it has been day after day.
Wow.
I think it was helped by the fact that we had an NFL game this past weekend. The Baltimore and the Jacksonville team. The Ravens?
Ravens and the Jaguars.
And the Jaguars.
Yeah.
And, of course, they took a knee.
Ah.
Or a large number of them did.
Uh-huh.
And so the protest, which has been covered before, the protest crossed the Atlantic in the actual physical sense.
Interesting.
And it got a lot of play over here.
What's the opinion? What is the opinion of the letters to the editor, the pundits? What is their observation about this?
Well, I've been listening to the letters to the editors, pundits. I listen a lot to another radio program other than WTKF. It's called LBC. It's the big phone-in program here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, I'd say 90% of the calls are very much opposed to Trump's position. You know, they say, why is he spending so much time, arguing about whether or not people should take a knee when you've got North Korea about to erupt?
Okay.
That's one angle.
Uh-huh.
The other is, of course, you know, this is a freedom of speech issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's freedom of speech. Don't they have freedom of speech in the U.S.? And then the other issue that comes up is we think, the people really been following it and looking at it carefully, that he holds a grudge against the NFL because of his days when he tried to start the U.S. Football League.
Good point. That's a lot.
And the NFL basically drove him out of business.
Right. That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. Another angle is that how could they possibly even think about sacking their players? I mean, what's a team without players?
All right. Now, here's a quick question for you, Tom. We had one of our listeners is interested in asking this question. Gary wants to know, in the issue of protocol in the UK, and I'm curious about this in relationship to, if you will, national pride and nationalism protocol, God Save the Queen or probably Britannica. What would happen if any of the professional teams there, do they even play the national anthem? Do they even do anything in relation to Her Royal Highness. Do they do anything in advance of these games to recognize the country, the United Kingdom, or in that case, France or Germany? What do they do in those countries?
Yes, they do play the national anthem, and people normally stand, but it's not as rigid. You know, people don't put their hand over their heart. They don't salute if they are in the military, as they do in America. The British flag doesn't have the same significance that the to the British people that the American flag does to the to the American public. The American flag, I tell people over here, the American flag is a sort of combination of flag and queen. All of American culture, its history, its laws, its beliefs are embodied in the physical form of the flag. Whereas in the UK, all that is embodied in the physical form of the monarch.
Right.
And so it's sort of diluted. The importance of the flag is diluted a bit.
Okay, the other question. The other question.
That's not to say that people don't get a lump in the throat sometimes when they hear the national anthem being played, but it's not the same.
Okay, and the other question that Gary was wondering in this case, would it be acceptable if the players at the mention of God Save the Queen or possibly Britannica, something of this nature, when if the teams were to do something that would be descriptive, for want of a better term, descriptive of a protest, such as sitting down, kneeling down, turning their backs, something of that nature. How would that be received in the European community, including the UK?
I think it'd be received better, but there would obviously be protests.
Okay.
But I don't think it'd be quite to the same degree, because, as I said, the importance of the flag is different. But people refuse to meet the Queen all the time, because they don't agree with the class system. They see her as being the apex of the class system. So it's a well-established protest.
Okay. The other question, let's go to this. You brought it up. We've got about 2.5 minutes to go before the break. You mentioned the situation with North Korea and the president and his continuing conflict with Kim Jong-un and now, of course, their ambassador, Ambassador Ri. What is the reaction there in the United Kingdom and in Europe? What's their opinion?
Well, I think it got summed up quite well by an opinion piece in the French newspaper Le Monde. And they are basically saying, we expect more from the American president. That you sort of expect a juvenile shouting tantrum from a young dictator like Kim Jong-un in North Korea. But we've always expected the American president to act more like the grown-up in the conversation. They don't see Trump acting like a grown-up.
Okay, the response here is that we've been through this now for some 20-some odd years, going back to his father, of course. This is something that's really getting frustrating here to the U.S. And, of course, the recent activities of Kim Jong-un to send missiles now twice over Japan has many of us here in the States feeling that what has it gotten us thus far? Why don't we change the approach? The other aspect of this, but the other real quick aspect of this is, I think now all of a sudden the real force in this debate, being China, is itself very concerned, which until recently has not been.
Well, I think it is very concerned. And I think it's concerned because there's a severe danger of a nuclear war. And they are tied into a military alliance with North Korea. And at the very most, they might have to come to the support of North Korea. Otherwise, they lose face everywhere else in the world. That's one scenario. The other one, at the very least, if there is a nuclear war, millions of people are going to be fleeing across the border into China. Radiation fallout, nuclear fallout is going to fall on China. It would be a disaster for China.
Well, it strikes me that now all of a sudden China realizes that they have to play a role in this, which, quite frankly, and we've got to go to a break, they've been very cavalier and casual in doing
until
recently.
Well, you have to
recently.
Ask yourself why.
Why?
Why? And the reason is because playing a role before meant putting pressure on North Korea, which could have easily led to the collapse of the North Korean regime. And they don't want that because North Korea is a buffer for them between China and 25,000 American troops in South Korea.
We've been this route. We've been down this path. That's you and I numerous times in the past. The real issue is, while that's a buffer, that buffer is, as we would say in the States, a rattlesnake, and it doesn't care who it bites. And that, of course, being Kim Jong-un, that's the comparison I'm making. All right.
Well, I'm giving you the Chinese view.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm telling you what I've been told by Chinese diplomats.
Right, but still.
So, and I believe they're telling the truth. They don't have any reason not to. So, you know, I'm saying this is what the Chinese think, and I think it should be taken into account.
Okay, we're talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 2nd of October. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Iraqi Kurds will be counting the cost of their independence referendum as Iran, Iraq, and Turkey unite to block air and land access to landlocked Kurdistan. All three are worried that an independent Kurdistan in Iraq will be a magnet for Kurdish separatists throughout the region. Feuding Palestinians will try to start to heal the breach when West Bank Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah visits Gaza on Monday. There is talk of joint control of ministries. Britain's ruling Conservative Party is in the middle of its annual party conference. The main aim is to present a united front on Brexit. Prime Minister Theresa May will address the conference on Wednesday. Coalition negotiations will be in full swing in Germany next week as Chancellor Angela Merkel cobbles together a government after her disappointing election result. The most likely scenario is a coalition of the Christian Democrats, Christian Social Union, Federal Democrats, and Green Party. On Monday, the trial starts in Malaysia of two women accused of killing Kim Jong-nam, half-brother of the North Korean dictator. On the same day, the UN Committee for the Rights of the Child will report on North Korean claims that sanctions threaten the lives of North Korean children. Renewed U.S. sanctions against Iran is a cloud hanging over European-Iranian trade talks to be held on Tuesday. President Trump has indicated that he will revoke the Iran nuclear deal and reimpose sanctions from mid-October. Trump, meanwhile, is off to hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico on Tuesday, after his White House meeting with the Thai Prime Minister in an attempt to rebuild U.S.-Thai relations. Diplomatic relations were broken following the 2014 military coup. The Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday discusses the Trump administration's controversial DACA policy, which involves ending the right to remain in the U.S. for up to 800,000 children of illegal immigrants. The act which allowed them to stay will end when it comes up for renewal on Thursday. It is Nobel Prize Week next week, or at least the announcements. The biggest prize is always the Peace Prize. It will be announced on Friday. Other award winners announced this week are medicine on Monday, physics on Tuesday, and chemistry on Wednesday. Australia's Catholic primate, Cardinal Pell, is in court on Friday for his second hearing related to sex offences. Cardinal Pell is also the Vatican treasurer and the third highest ranking official at the Holy See. Nissan's new electric car goes on sale in Japan on Monday. The company claims the car has a range of 240 miles on a single charge. And that was next week's news today so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening. Yes, this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom and I are talking and just finished a conversation about this topic of North Korea and its relationship with the U.S. and China. Associated with this debate on North Korea, very quickly, the issue of the Chinese role in this. Do you see the Chinese stepping up to the plate and really taking control of the circumstance in China? Or are they still being very cautious? There's been some concerns, of course, getting the United Nations involved in this and sanctions. What do we know? Are the Chinese really going to pursue sanctions?
I think they are definitely pursuing sanctions. Okay. There's no doubt about that. You know, I think it's important. They don't like Kim Jong-un any more than anyone else. The president of China, Xi Jinping, has never met him.
Okay.
They've never had any official visits or state visits. No one from North Korea has been to China. No one from China has been to North Korea at the presidential level for 6 years.
We're going to get into the issue of the Indian economy, so I'm going to hold off a question about the Chinese economy as well until we get to that point. Let's look at, I mentioned the word economy, let's look at the topic of Brexit. And I'm looking at a note from you, reviving Brexit and the British conference season. What's the future? Because if you think about this, 6 months ago, Tom, maybe 9 months ago, Brexit was the top of the fold discussion around the world. Definitely there, of course, in the UK and Europe. What's the future of Brexit? And of course, that's the exit.
It still is very much top of the fold here in Europe. And last week, Mrs. May gave a speech. Basically, the two sides, the British and the EU negotiators, have been deadlocked for months. Mm-hmm. And there are several issues they're deadlocked over. One is the issue of the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. The other is the issue of EU nationals in Britain and British nationals in the EU, what rights they have. And the third issue is the size of what's being called the divorce bill. That is, how much Britain should pay in what are called ongoing costs to exit from the EU. And there's been absolutely no movement on any of them. So last week, Mrs. May gave a talk, almost an hour-long talk, in Florence, in which she tried to break the logjam. And it looks as if she sort of made a chink in the logjam. But what she did was she tried to create an atmosphere of cooperation, or project an atmosphere of cooperation. She's managed to do that, but she refuses to give any details. And so I think we're still stuck where we've always been. And this is being attacked by all the other political parties. So every year they have what's called the conference season, and all the political parties meet and they develop policies. Labour is just waving this, you know, saying, look, you know, they still can't get their act together. Mm-hmm. Lib Dems are waving it and saying, you know, we've got to do something about it. And I can tell you that when they get to the Conservative Party conference, they're going to be as divided as ever. And that starts this Sunday.
What you're telling me is, while Brexit exists in ink, it really has not begun.
No.
Okay.
No, they haven't made any, they have not made any progress on any point at all.
What does this do for the economy of both UK and Europe?
Well, at the moment, everyone just waiting and seeing.
Okay, status quo. Status quo would be.
But okay. It does mean there are people who are not investing in the UK. The UK economy is expected to grow by about 1.7% this coming year. Last year, it grew by over 3%.
Okay, so there's a slowdown in the economy. How about in Europe?
European economy is doing quite well.
Okay, let's move on to, since I'm talking about Europe, let's talk about Germany for just a quick second. Chancellor Merkel was reelected as chancellor. However, it's created somewhat of a split within the German parliament. What does this mean for Chancellor Merkel and for support of the European Union?
Well, support of the European Union, I think, is still strong, very strong. Now, what's happened is you have the Alternative for Deutschland, mm-hmm. which is the far right party, which has historically been both anti-EU and anti-Islamic. Mm-hmm. Now, for the first time, it has secured federal representation with over 9% of the vote. And it's a lot bigger than people thought it would be. And so they're a bit, you know, concerned. I must say that all the other political parties absolutely hate the Alternative for Deutschland and refuse to work with them. They regard them as just short of being Nazis. And they say this. That's not my words. Right, that's theirs. Right.
There's a split within the Alternative for Deutschland, is there not? It's not a cohesive...
Oh, yeah. No. It's not a monolithic party. It's funny. All these extreme parties seem to have more splits than the center parties. But in the past, about 18 months ago, they were anti-EU and anti-Islamic. But they seem to have backtracked a bit on the anti-EU bit. And I think the reason for that was that the anti-EU party in the Netherlands and the anti-EU party in France did not do as well in elections as hoped. And so they have shifted their focus almost entirely to being anti-Islamic.
The issue of immigration, and I don't know if you've had time to really research this, but and again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, one of the great disputes associated within the German election, when you mentioned the Netherlands a few moments ago, and in France, has been this topic of the refugees, the assimilation of foreign nationals into the European community. Is that still a heated topic?
Yes. Now, I think what Mrs. Merkel has acknowledged is that she is going to have to change her policies on this. She needs to win back some of the Alternative for Deutschland voters. And the only way she can do that is by changing her policies on immigration and refugees. Now, how much she changes them, I don't know. But she's acknowledged that she's going to have to make some changes.
Interesting. All right, we're going to get to more issues here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. But as always, we welcome your comments. You can make a text or you can send emails to viewpointsradio@hotmail.com or via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on the Talk Station. Tom, we were talking a few moments ago with you about the issues in Germany, and it accommodates the question associated with economic issues. I want to touch on several here very quickly. One having to do with the topic of the economy in China. Let's look at the economy in India, economic downturn there. I want to talk about the economy in China. And then I want to bring up a topic associated with FANG. That's a great acronym. We'll give you the details in that acronym in just a moment. First, the economic circumstances in India.
Well, in India, last year, they had, at this time in the period April to June, which is what they've just released statistics on, in 2016, the Indian economy was growing at 9% a year, okay, which is great. You know, I mean, that's fantastic. It's now growing. It's been cut in 2017 for April to June to 5.1%.
That's a significant growth no matter what.
Yeah, well, no, it isn't, because they reckon that in order, because of the growth in population and the money that has to be invested in infrastructure and everything else, that to lift India out of poverty, they have to be growing at about 7% a year. Developed economies are in a different category. Okay. You know, if you grow at 2 or 3% a year.
Okay, that's a good point.
Then that's really good. Right. If you grow at 7% a year, that's overheating.
Yeah, all right. Now, my question is, what's the cause of this decline?
Well, they think it's the government's policies. So, you know, this is not good news for Narendra Modi, who's the prime minister. Now, you know, it's not particularly good news for people in the West, because India has started to become one of those engines of growth. You know, if the Indian economy does well, then so does the American economy, right, and the European economy, because the Indians are buying things from Europe and America. So we want the Indian economy to do well. We want it to be lifted out of poverty, because they will buy even more.
What's the, but moving on, because I will move to China here very quickly, but what is the future? What is the plan? Is there a way to correct this situation, or will this take time?
It will probably take time. One of the things that Modi did when he became prime minister was he abolished something called the National Economic Council. Just this week, he has revived it. to try and develop a greater economic strategy.
Let's move to a neighbor of India. We won't get into the disputes over a certain portion of the of India and China where they share a common area. Let's talk about their...
Which has been temporarily resolved, by the way.
How so? And let's share that with the audience. I'm remembering...
Well, basically, they're fighting over the border in the Himalayas.
Right.
And they have basically withdrawn and agreed not to fight for the time being.
Okay, good.
It's sort of truce.
All right, that works for the moment. Let's talk about the Chinese economy. I've seen some notes here of concerns related to the Chinese economy. Is there a concern that the Chinese economy may, in fact, be overheating?
It's very interesting. The Chinese economy is still growing. It's projected to grow at 6.7% as opposed to 6.2%. It is having a credit crunch. And here's a difference between China and the West, in particular Britain and America. The credit crunch is corporate, that basically the corporations, the companies, are being cut off from funds now, mm-hmm. or the interest rates are going up. The Bank of China and various economists do think that for the moment they've got it under control. The government has told the businesses, well, you know, if your costs of borrowing go up, just pass them on to the customers. Which means, in many cases, most of those customers are in Europe and America. Wow. So expect the goods that you buy from China to go up in price. In Britain and America, the credit crunch is household or personal credit. Right. And we're having a big problem with personal credit here in the UK, to the extent that the Labour Party at the conference this week has called for regulation of credit cards and a cap on how much they can charge in interest and everything, because people are not borrowing on their mortgages anymore because the banks aren't lending to them, but they are borrowing at extortionate rates at credit cards. And the same in America.
Very good point. Okay, this is an economic issue that we're going to be watching with interest. All right, let's talk about economic issues. I brought up the topic of FANG. That's Facebook, Apple, Netflix, and Google. And, of course, there's some concerns here in the States that need to be very careful about, of course, Russian intervention there, coming back to Russia always. But you have some information, also concerns about the monopolistic value of these companies, particularly Facebook and Google. What is the feeling there in the UK and in Europe?
Well, you know, they don't like Facebook. Well, the politicians don't like Facebook and Google. They don't like them for lots of reasons. One is that they're not European, and they have basically become almost countries in their own right. And they control the platforms through which news operates. And that includes fake news, hate speech, racist comments, and terrorism outlets. And on the 1st of October this week, the Germans are actually have a law going into effect, which says that if a item of hate speech or anything related to criminal activity goes up on a social media platform such as Facebook or Google, then it has to be removed within 24 hours. If it is not, they will be fined $6 million for each item.
Who's going to be the judge or the arbiter on whether or not this is hate speech?
The German government or the German court.
Wow. And how quickly will they be?
This applies to any social media platform. It starts on the 1st of October. This applies to any social media platform which has more than 2 million German users.
The question I have for you is, and this goes back to how we began the conversation related to the dispute on the flag and the protest and sports events in this country. The question was freedom of speech, yet it strikes me that this is a means of controlling speech, Tom.
Yes, and I think, they're all in favor of freedom of speech, as long as it does not do things like wow. help a criminal activity or terrorism or incite violence.
Okay.
And that's not all that dissimilar from the laws in the U.S.
Well,
you cannot, for instance, tell someone, I'm or tell someone else to kill someone and claim freedom of speech.
Well, we won't get into that debate today, but that I just find it interesting. I want to move on to a few other items because I mentioned Russia a few. Well, we do have to talk about, let's talk about Boeing and Bombardier very, very quickly and that relationship. I did see that the U.S., of course, is looking at, I think, almost a 225%
tariff
on Bombardier, which is a Canadian company, by the way.
It's a Canadian company, but the wings are made in Northern Ireland.
Okay.
And they employ 4,000 people in a factory there.
Uh-huh.
And the wings are, you know, as you probably know, a fairly important part of a plane.
Yeah, they keep it afloat. Yeah, in the air, yes.
Yeah, they don't need them on the ground.
No.
But at any rate, Theresa May has protested very strongly. The Labour Party has picked this up as a cudgel with which to beat the government. And the reason is quite simply this, that one of the major planks in Theresa May's Brexit program is a special free trade deal with the U.S. Oh, the U.S. is going to love us. My friend Donald, he is going to give us all sorts of great deals. No, he's going to slap a 225% tariff on planes, and that is going to put 4,000 people out of work. So it sort of undercuts the whole Brexit position, or this idea that Donald Trump is going to cut a special deal for his friend Theresa.
Well, now, wait a second. Recently, Theresa May has said some very critical things about, quote, her friend Donald Trump. So one has to wonder if this isn't just all politics. I want to move on to a few other items before our next break. Let's talk very quickly about several items. One, I'm curious, the Russian military exercise, has there been a lot of coverage about that recently? There was initially a great deal of concern. It's over. What was there?
Yeah.
Is there a feeling of confidence now that Russia was not doing something underhanded?
Well, we don't know yet for certain whether or not they have. I mean, they certainly have not attacked Ukraine. They have not attacked Poland or Lithuania or anything like that. But they did move another, 7,000 troops into Belarus. And they moved more troops into Kaliningrad. What we don't know is how many of those troops are now going to be going back to Russia.
All right.
And there's a strong suspicion that a lot of them are going to stay there. The other thing was the nature of the exercises. They were clearly, from the way they were organized, they were clearly aggressive, offensive exercises.
Mm-hmm.
It basically said they were planning to attack, not to defend.
Is there a sense that Russia is still of grave concern for Europe?
They're terrified.
Okay. I think that's...
Especially the Poland... Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, the Baltic countries, Finland, Sweden. For the first time, Sweden invited American troops into Sweden while these exercises between Belarus and Russia were taking place. Sweden is not a member of NATO. It has been a neutral country for over 100 years.
Very interesting. All right, I want to move to a very quick item before we go to the break. And we've been seeing the stories. It doesn't seem to resonate a great deal here in the States. There's a referendum in Catalonia of secession. And of course, the U.S., of course, has announced that they are not in favor of dividing or splitting up Spain. What's the status of that?
Well, you know, the thing about Catalonia, the state, I mean, basically the people in Catalonia do not want to be part of Spain. And they haven't for a while. And the government in Madrid wants to keep them there. Why do they want to keep Catalonia in Spain? Well, first of all, the capital of Catalonia is Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
Barcelona is one of the economic powerhouses of Spain. I think it produces 20% of the national GDP. Most of the port traffic goes through Barcelona. So it's very important. They don't want to lose Barcelona, and they don't want to lose Catalonia. The other reason is people think of Spain as being one autonomous country. It's not. There are 17 autonomous regions.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those 17 different autonomous regions, 8 of them have separatist movements that they want to break away from Spain.
Okay, real quickly, we've got to go to break. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Spain is also part of the European Union. and it has been a country of concern for its financial condition. Quick question. What is this to the Spanish?
It's doing much better financially.
Okay. What is it doing to the participation?
As a country.
What is
but if it were to split up, it would be disaster.
Okay. There'd be financial difficulties. All right. We'll get back to that in a moment here with Viewpoints Around the World and Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Economists love globalization. It allows them to achieve what their fellow bean counters, the accountants, call economies of scale. This has substantial knock-on benefits. It reduces the prices at the till, and so it is good for customers. It keeps down inflation, which is fantastic news for the old and decrepit types on fixed incomes. It creates job opportunities in the developing world, which means the developed world does not need to dig so deeply into its aid pockets. International understanding is improved by the exponential growth in global business, political, social, and cultural links required to grease the globalization wheels. Politicians are happy because the increased savings and profits mean more tax revenues for them to spend on their pet projects and ships and planes and soldiers. But there are some dark clouds to accompany this blue sky. First, there's what I regard as a bit of a canard, job exports. I'm unimpressed by the Trumpian argument because it can be rectified with economic growth and retraining. Blowing away the next cloud, identity loss, is more problematic. As the world melds into one interdependent homogeneous blob, who are we as individuals? I ask the question because who we are is determined to a large degree by the language we speak, the religion we practice, our national history, culture, and laws. Globalization is creating an identity crisis, and that in turn has created a political backlash from people who fear that the essence of who they are is under threat. Furthermore, the nationalist backlash threatens to undermine all the benefits of globalization and regionalization that have accrued since the end of World War II and even many years before that. There are many examples of this, but two recent ones are the independence referenda in Kurdistan and Catalonia. The Kurds have been an ethnic group with their own language for centuries. But it was not until the 1920 Treaty of Sèvres that the idea of a Kurdish state was officially mooted. However, 3 years later it was scrapped by the Treaty of Lausanne, which divided the old Ottoman Empire between Britain, France, and Turkey. What is regarded as Kurdistan was divided between Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. Catalonia was actually its own medieval kingdom until 1492, when it joined with Queen Isabella of Castile and King Ferdinand of Aragon to expel the Moors from the Iberian Peninsula. To a greater or lesser degree, they have stayed part of what became the modern Spanish state ever since, while still retaining their distinctive language and customs. Now they both think that they can do better on their own, and want to go independent, but they are facing problems in doing so. During the years that Catalan and Kurdistan have been part of bigger political units, the world has moved on. Laws, treaties, and trade agreements have been negotiated and implemented by the parent governments, Iraq and Spain, respectively. Are these to be jettisoned? Do Spain and Iraq's political and trading partners want to deal with an independent Kurdistan and Catalonia? Will Iraq and Spain let them? In the case of Kurdistan, Iraq, Turkey, and Iran have discovered a rare common interest in physically isolated, landlocked Iraqi Kurdistan in a bid to strangle the political fetus before it is born. In Catalonia, Spain has let it be known it would block Catalonia from EU membership, which it would need to survive. Catalonia and Kurdistan are just two of the most recent examples of the world's national identity crisis. The election of Donald Trump can be traced back to the issue, as can Britain's Brexit decision. Independence movements are growing in numbers and influence around the world. The Scots, Bretons, Welsh, Walloons, Basques, Andalusians, Rohingyas, Tibetans, Chechens, Palestinians, Houthis, and many more are agitating either for independence or greater autonomy, despite the economic and political consequences. The practical politics of globalization have run into the brick wall of emotional national identity, and vice versa. It is up to the political leaders to balance the two sides or face the consequences.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, few items that we can wrap up with before we get to the wishing well airplane in China. I'm looking forward to hearing this. A referendum among the Kurds. This is a referendum to separate the Kurds from Iraq and Iran and part of Syria. What's the future of this referendum? Does it have any grave concerns about possibly continuing the military strife in that region?
Yes, definitely. The referendum was held on Monday, and it's just in the Iraqi Kurds who held the referendum. That's 8.5 million. They don't have the results yet. The Iraqi government is saying, if you release the results, we will stop all air traffic into the Kurdish region. Mm. And at the same time, the Turks, who are terrified of a Kurdistan being set up, which will act as a magnet for drawing support from Turkish Kurds, they have moved troops onto the border and are saying they will close the border and the Kurds will not be able to import food into Kurdistan. They intend to starve them out if they announce the results. And they won't be able to move the oil out. They have quite a few oil deposits, especially around the town of Kirkuk. The results, 72% of the population are said to have voted. And they expect that 90% voted in favor of independence.
Would it be an independent state? Would it be an independent region?
That's what they want. They are an autonomous region now. They want to be an independent state.
Okay.
And they've wanted this since basically the end of the 19th century.
Right. The Kurds were there was ethnic cleansing by the Turks, and it's happened with Iran and Iraq as well.
And Iraq, yeah.
What's a quick question for you? What's the role of the UN in this issue?
I don't think they have a particular role. I think more likely to ask, what's the role of the U.S. in this issue?
Well, the U.S. has announced that they've been asked to step back, and I think the U.S. has. I don't know why the U.S.
Yes, no, they have. But the thing is that the U.S. has used the Kurds as boots on the ground in fighting ISIS. Now, there's still a lot of work to be done in fighting ISIS.
But wait a second. They've used the Iraqis as well. I mean, the Iraqis.
No, the Kurds.
Well,
the Kurds.
Yeah, but the Iraqis have been participating in the fight against ISIS, as have
No, but the Kurds have borne the brunt of it. They have actually offered themselves to be the boots on the ground in order to secure American support for this very thing, independence.
Interesting. We'll be following this. All right, Tom, let's wrap it up with wishing well airplane in China. And by the way, I've had a comment. Folks listening to this program always look forward to the last item on the agenda. Wishing well airplane in China?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. There was an 80-year-old Chinese lady in Shanghai going for her very first airplane ride. And you had to walk out to the airplane, pass the wings, and climb up the stairs to get onto it. And as she passed the wings, she stopped, dug into her purse, made a wish, and threw some coins into the engines.
Oh, my goodness. that was the end of that flight.
She's a Buddhist and a Confucianist, and it was, you know, paying obeisance to the gods of flight.
Oh, my land. Ooh, well, did they let her get back aboard any airplane after that?
Yeah, no, they took into account she was 80 and it was her first flight. But wow. It was 5 hours later before they got all the coins out and made it was okay.
Wishing Well Airplane Ride in China with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. As always, Tom, thank you for your time. Look forward to conversations next week.
Always enjoy it, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.